Good morning, and welcome to the City Club of Chicago. I am Amanda Agosti and serve as the club's executive director. Since 1903, the City Club has been committed to providing a forum for the discussion of civic and public affairs in the community. While we all wish we were eating a plate of chicken parm at Maggiano's, we hope you're enjoying this virtual platform and are continuing to learn and engage at our events. Please remember that the City Club of Chicago is a nonprofit, and while today's program is complimentary, we hope you'll become a member or make a donation to continue supporting the club. We also encourage you to submit questions and comments during the program, and we'll get to as many as we can following the panel discussion. Today's panel focuses on the Chicago Connected Initiative to provide high-speed internet free of cost to 100,000 Chicago public school children to support remote learning and much more. We are joined today by moderator Daniel Anello, CEO of Kids First Chicago, the City of Chicago's Chief Financial Officer, Jenny Hahn Bennett, Darnell Shields, Executive Director of Austin Coming Together, and Philip DiPartolo, Chicago Public Schools Chief Information Officer. Daniel, take it away.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning. I guess we're right in the middle of it. Glad to be here. I want to say thank you first to the City Club of Chicago and to Stiefel for sponsoring this event. I'm excited to jump into a conversation with a pretty lively panel. Next slide, please. But before we get started, I'm going to walk through just a quick high level of what we're going to be talking about today, which is the digital divide in Chicago Connected. As introduced, I don't need to introduce the panel any further, but here's a quick snapshot of who you'll be speaking to. Next slide. And first, I want to start with where this started for us, which was a conversation with families and parents. See, the work at Kids First Chicago is really anchored in doing outreach and making sure that we're getting straight from the ground what we're hearing from real families about the issues that they're confronted. And when we hit COVID and the coronavirus and went into the stay-at-home orders at the end of March, there's a lot of things that we're hearing from families. But what was really prevalent was a conversation that was happening amongst a number of families around either their neighbors or themselves confronted with the lack of internet as a big issue. This is an issue that one of the panelists today, Darnell Shields from Austin Coming Together, was hearing as well from families that he works with in Austin, and he can elaborate further on just how much work had already gone into trying to make something available to families. But this issue is something that families were thinking of in addition to food insecurity, housing, insecurity, and a whole host of things that they were confronted with that the pandemic has made us aware of. Next slide, please. And corroborating what we were hearing from the ground, which is what we do with research, we pulled census data. We took a look at how big the issue was, and we were surprised by the scale of it. I think across the city, we saw that 1 in 5 children under the age of 18 were disconnected from the internet. It's a very similar statistic for households as a whole. But what's more surprising is on the next slide, we saw that 110,000 kids were disconnected, but we saw an incredible polarity in where that disconnection was happening. And so if you look across the city and you look at the number of inequities that we talk about on a day-to-day basis, whether we're talking about healthcare, life expectancy, school quality, or air quality, the truth is we have a city that is deeply divided when it comes to access and opportunity. And indifferent from that was the reality that internet connections in some communities like Austin and Humble Park, you saw household connection rates of only 1 in 3 households being connected or 1 in 3 being disconnected. And we saw 1 in 2 households disconnected in West Englewood. And there were entire census blocks where we saw as much as 80% of the households disconnected. Next slide, please. So from there, the conversation really kind of picked up. There was a report that was released that had a lot of the data we just shared that we did in partnership with the Metropolitan Planning Council. And that really brought light to the issue, both from the parent narrative standpoint, what they were experiencing as families, as well as the broader data standpoint of how big this issue was. And armed with that information, coming together in partnership, we had the city, CBO partners, Chicago Public Schools, plenty of support from philanthropic funders who have been incredible for this overall effort, which we'll get to speaking to in a bit, and the internet service providers, Comcast and RCN in particular, as well as T-Mobile, all providing significant support in putting together this program that we're calling Chicago Connected. So with that, next slide, please. I'm excited to dive into the panel in a moment, but as a quick highlight of like what's in this program, really, really simply, this is a four-year program connecting families for as much as a year, up to 4 years for free. It's a $50 million program over this time period. It's mostly privately funded in the first 2 years, and then in years 3 and 4 will be picked up by the city and CPS. It's a phased approach with the intent beginning with families that have CPS children in them, so really targeting the first 100,000 kids that are in CPS homes, 60,000 households approximately, and it really launched only, 2 months ago today. So June 25th is when we launched officially, and a lot of the work continues. The group that you'll see here are all partnered as part of this program, and we continue to work on it every day to try to make sure as many families are connected as possible as quickly as possible. So with that, let's pivot to the panel. I will dive right into questions with just a quick reminder of who we have. We have Jenny Huang Bennett from the city, the CFO. Darnell Shields, the executive director of Austin Coming Together, the backbone organization in Austin. And Phil DiBartolo, the CIO of Chicago Public Schools. And so my first question really starts with you, Jenny. It's a high-level question, and I know it's one that really sets the tone for where we are. But what makes this program different from other programs in the country? We've heard about disconnected families. We've heard about internet being an issue. What's different about Chicago Connected?
Sure. Thanks for the question, Daniel. And I want to start by saying how excited I am to be here today to talk about Chicago Connected. It's truly a groundbreaking program. And based on the research that we've done nationally, no other city has implemented a program like this. I'm going to highlight a couple key characteristics, but I know we'll get into some more discussion around this as we move through the panel. First and foremost is the size of the program. We are projecting that we're going to hit somewhere around 100,000 students under Chicago Connected. It makes it one of the largest internet connectivity programs in the country. And importantly, was sized based on the partnership with Kids for Chicago, the research report that you put together, which is based on census data, but also the data analytics that we did as a part of building up Chicago Connected relates to students who are in need of internet, high-speed internet access. To put it at a high level, we structured this program and the size of this program in order to make a bold target of addressing the digital divide for all of the CPS students who are in need of high-speed internet access. The second characteristic I'd highlight is the length of the program. And the mayor says this often in all of the work that we've been doing around COVID in terms of how we really shouldn't be just focusing on building scaffolding to address COVID needs, but build permanent infrastructure to help support some of the needs that we knew existed before COVID. As it relates to Chicago Connected, it is one of the longest duration programs nationally. As you mentioned earlier, it's free for CPS students for up to 4 years. And importantly, that long-term connectivity helps not just address the learning needs of students today, but tries to really bridge the digital divide in a permanent way and helps to build infrastructure around that. In terms of how Chicago Connected is different, I would just also note that a lot of care and effort has been taken in Chicago Connected to meet families where they are. This is really important because as we talk about kind of where we are with the program and where we intend to go, making sure that we're addressing the real needs of families is such a critical component to having a successful program. Phil's going to get into some of the architecture and structure on the program in a bit, but importantly, we didn't want to dictate the type of technology to families. So as a part of this program, we're offering both wired and wireless solutions. We know, for example, that some families, especially those who are housing insecure, hotspot, for example, may be more appropriate. But then the wired service provides the entire household with the ability to benefit from internet, which is a critical component to what we wanted to see as it relates to how we can leverage this tool for not just CPS students, but their families. Phil's going to talk about some of the other program structures that we've created that really help to support families specifically, but it was a key consideration that we had in mind. one of the other points I would make here and want to make sure I emphasize is that what's also very different from this program is that there is a community-based organizational infrastructure that we've created and invested in order to make sure that we are reaching families where they are. What we found as it relates to signups is what's most effective is when you hear from trusted partners, whether it's principals at the schools, whether it's the CBOs, which are trusted partners in the community, or CPS. It's important for them to hear from those trusted partners about the program in order to ensure that they're signing up for a program that will help serve them.
Thank you, Jenny. So, Jenny, I think the burning question, and I certainly saw one of these come through in the preliminary questions that some people sent in, a number of questions around this, but how is the program going right now? Like, where are we?
Sure. We're actually really excited about where the program is. It's been, I would call it an absolute success. You don't have to take my word for it. We've had somewhere around 16 different states, cities, other organizations, foundations call us and ask us how we did this. The program was profiled in the Education Superhighway as a case study in what they termed the Chicago model. And we've had some constructive conversations with a number of other cities nationally who are looking to build their internet accessibility program based on the model that we've created here. Phil's going to talk about this as well, but we've created some toolkits and various other materials that should help other cities be able to build up this type of program in their locales, and have had some active conversations around how it is that we can try to expand upon the model. By way of signups, we are currently at over 18,000 students signed up. We have seen that grow exponentially over the last several weeks. There are somewhere around 1,700 signups that have occurred in the last week alone. And just to put that number into context, 1,700 signups basically means that there are roundly about a signup every 2 minutes. So in the time that we've been talking, we've had, somewhere around 6 signups already, and that continues to grow at an exponential pace. Importantly, the other thing I would add is we haven't even really gotten fully started on all of the various marketing efforts that we've started to implement. The CBO network is really just getting up and running. Back to school is just about to get kickstarted. As a CPS parent, I know I haven't even started about thinking about sending my kid back to school. And we know as we get closer to the start of school date that a lot of the focus around Chicago Connected and ultimately the signups will start to increase. I think that, so far we've just heard, aside from the numbers in and of itself, a lot of excitement around the program. The things that stick with me are really the stories of families and how it is that this program has helped to serve their needs. One in particular that sticks with me is a single mom, she's mom of four, who's also an essential worker. And she had the only way they have to access the internet is through her phone, and she takes it to work every day. And so you can just imagine how hard it is for families to be able to do not just what it is that their kids need to do in accessing the internet, but also what they may need by way of internet needs, and do that without access to high-speed internet. This program is really what, can help families be able to access the internet and be able to leverage that tool.
Awesome. Thank you, Jenny. So I'm going to pivot now and take us back in time a little bit, Darnell, which it feels like 2 years ago, but I'm just going to go back to March when this was all starting. And I know for you, you were looking at this issue as it bubbled up right away and doing a ton of work at Austin Coming Together to try to address it at the local level. And so I'm hoping you can kind of take us back, give us a snapshot of what that was, and explain kind of what were some of the things that you were thinking about, what you were hearing from the community, and ultimately, where you wanted to go with that work and how Chicago Connected now fits into that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Daniel. The digital divide has long been an issue in the Austin community. And, but once COVID stay-at-home orders came down, like access to the internet and computers became just an outright necessity, along with, other types of deficits that we had in terms of food insecurity, housing, and so forth. I think it surprised a lot of people that, something as simple as access to the internet could be so crippling for families. But when you're not able to go and come as you please, as we were so used to and commonly doing, that's where I think it really sort of exacerbated and really shined a light on this issue. But this wasn't the first time that we really started to address it and encounter it. I think, as you said, you know, maybe even 2 years ago, we were really kind of coming in contact with this issue as our member network really was working with families to be able to prepare their young people to be ready to go back to school. And so when you're in a situation where most of education and learning, even in the prior to COVID, there was a lot that was happening remotely and leveraging digital tools, we were learning that a lot of families either, you know, had issues. It was kind of threefold: had issues in terms of being connected to the internet, may not have had the adequate digital devices to be able to access the web. And then the last thing was having being up to date and up to speed in terms of digital literacy. And so, you know, we sort of established really early on that we needed to kind of build some partnerships to address this. And so we started to have a lot of conversations with groups like the United Way and Comcast. And it was really focused on how do we kind of leverage what's available in terms of resources and programs like Internet Essentials and partnering with other organizations like CompuDoc to be able to get devices to those families. And so many students, you know, kind of benefited from gaining access to the internet from our early efforts. But, you know, what I think is really amazing is that, you know, because of all of the collaboration, and it was just a heightened focus on the need to collaborate, like many, many more households are now going to be supported through Chicago Connected. Because when we looked at, you know, just how the need was across the Austin community, while we were definitely doing, you know, our best, I don't think we were basically in a position to even, you know, put a dent in how much needed to be addressed. And so that's why a program like this is you know, and leveraging partnership like this is so key. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, while helping students for remote learning is critical, you know, my hope is that this program can really be expanded so families can gain greater access to other imperatives like access to job training online for employment and, you know, just simply being able to network with their family and peers to stay encouraged and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic. Because when you think about all the relief that has been available for families and being able to access those things, a lot of it has been online. And so, you know, being able to make sure that going forward, that families are connected, households are connected, I think is imperative and is key.
Thank you, Darnell. So Phil, I think Darnell touched on one of these items already, but I have two questions for you.
Sure.
One is to start with, and this is a question that's also already come through, where are we on devices when it comes to children and devices? Because I know that's a big thing that you've been the tip of the spear for in terms of work at CPS. And then the second is just a walkthrough of the actual architecture of Chicago Connected as a program.
Sure. Well, let's start with devices. Last spring after COVID hit, we knew that we were going to have a rather urgent need to fill. Anecdotally, we looked at your study to see, you know, what the bandwidth gap was. And I think, you know, fairly congruent relative to the number of households that were likely without a device for their student at home. Now, roundly, we estimated that between 100 and 120 students, 120,000 students were lacking a device at home. So the first thing we needed to figure out was how do we get that many devices out the door? And fortuitously, we had a very large stock of existing fleet in schools that we could leverage to get a quick start. We lent out roughly, you know, 60 to 70,000 devices from schools from our existing fleet, and then augmented that with new devices to the tune of roughly 50,000 that we purchased to make sure that we could get those out the door. Leveraging the existing fleet was a very critical part of the mix because, as we all know, there is a huge or was a rather tight supply chain coming out of, you know, residual effects of the tariff, you know, the fall, last fall, then moving into the slowdown of manufacturing in China, it really made the scramble for devices difficult for many districts, particularly smaller districts. So our ability to leverage the native fleet to get that done was a really huge piece for us. So at the end of the day, we distributed just over 128,000 devices. So as we flip the page to this year, we wanted to leverage that strong foundation. So the first thing we said was, look, if you've been loaned a device and you are not a graduating 12th grader or transferring out of the district, we want you to keep that device for the duration of this school year. So we hope that that provides us with very good bedrock going into this year, knowing that we can leverage 36,000 additional new devices that we have in our warehouse, as well as remaining existing fleet at schools, which is fairly significant. So key to all this is the leadership of our principals. So we were able to provide guidelines to principals on where they might want to focus based on, certain student data elements. For example, students in temporary living situations, we flagged those students as very likely needing a device and bandwidth. As you know, we made an investment in some hotspots there. But the key piece to this is that principals used that guidance and worked very aggressively to get devices out the door quickly. And principals are going to be the bedrock of the effort again this year. In order to facilitate that process for principals, what we've done is we've used the data from last spring's COVID remote engagement and flagged any student that had a low level of participation and also did not receive a device as the first wave of students that should be a point of focus for the start of this school year. Then we went out and looked at how many students were given a device that might be a little bit longer in tooth or might be coming up on end of warranty before the end of this school year. We've also flagged those students as possibly needing a newer device. What we do in every case is try to provide some guidelines to principals, but rely on their knowledge of their respective school communities to make sure that we're addressing the need. That was pretty quick, huh? In any event, we feel that we're in really relatively good shape to start this year. Device requests are coming in from schools. We're allocating the devices that we have in stock. We provide principals with assistance if they need help staging with the actual distribution at a school level. Really, anything that they need assistance with, we're poised to help with. I'll stop there and kind of pivot a little bit, Daniel, to go to the next question in terms of the architecture of the program itself. So for the CPS parent, there are several lines of communication and available information for them on Chicago Connected. It starts again at the school. We've provided every principal with their eligible list of Chicago Connected students. And the reason that this is a really important piece for us, Jenny touched on it earlier, there is a very real trust gap. The folks that we are looking to service have been disaffected for many years, promises made but not kept. So when we do our initial outreach, and the reason it takes multiple touches is that, some folks that we're trying to reach don't believe that this is true. I'm going to get a bill at the end of the month. At some point, there's going to be a reckoning. And we want people to know that that's not the case here. This is a no-cost program. And using the principals as that trusted voice, we think is going to be key to our success. So principals are provided with rosters so that they can identify the students at their school that need that are eligible for the program. At a website level, we've got a Chicago Connected website that provides detail on the program, and that also includes an eligibility tool. So that if folks don't have access but want to call the school or call our parent helpline, they're able to help establish whether a student is eligible for the program. So we provide knowledge to the school so principals have what they need to answer questions on the program. We have a website, CPS.edu Chicago Connected, that has details on the program and an eligibility tool. We have a parent help desk. That parent help desk is established so that parents can call in, whether they have a question on the devices that they've received, general program questions on Chicago Connected, or questions on our remote learning platforms. We saw that come in to a large degree last spring. In addition to that, we have our family and community engagement group that is doing direct outcalling to eligible families. This is a pivotal piece for us because we have folks on that line that speak Spanish, and we have a couple other languages that are covered. And we know that, a good degree of the folks that we're looking to reach, English might not be the first language spoken at home. So we try to make sure that multi-mode, multi-channel, we can cover, you know, all of the outreach that we need to from the CPS side. In addition to that, as Jenny and Darnell have both mentioned, the CBO is another vital component and not only helping us bridge the trust gap, but in getting the word out on the program. However, when we look at the CBOs, beyond getting the word out, one of the things that we think is very unique about this program is that CBOs are also given the tools to help families with digital literacy. In that sense, we're hoping that Chicago Connected goes beyond the simple transaction of giving somebody internet access and will actually serve as a support for the family to increase their level of digital literacy, because we know that our hope is that this connectivity not only helps student achievement and participation in remote learning, but also can provide families with other opportunities such as telehealth, and online, job skills. So the fact that we've engaged CBOs in that regard, I think, is a really important piece and a part of the program that very many families are going to start to see. I also want to mention our partners here, Comcast, RCN, T-Mobile. They've been fantastic. And of course, for a lot of parents, that's going to be the dialogue that they'll have. So if they're cleared for wired access, we've got Comcast and RCN, who we talk with very frequently, almost daily, to make sure that, you know, we're sharing FAQs and making sure that we're building a knowledge base for all the unique questions that might come in from different parents, because this is something that we're learning as we go along. This is greenfield that hasn't been done before. So we're continually running into, you know, case studies in certain households that we might need to sharpen the lens a little bit on our online materials and in the scripts that we give to operators at Comcast, RCN, our helpline, our family and community engagement team. All of these folks have to have a fair degree of connective fiber for this to be successful. And so far, I'm happy to say that the communication has been clear and, you know, all boats are kind of sailing in the right direction here. We're all trying to meet the same goal, and that is to service as many households in Chicago as possible.
Thank you, Phil. So taking a point out of that last statement you made, I think that, Jenny, a question for you is the story behind the public-private partnership here. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I think people see kind of what is produced and comes out, and it, you know, you feel like this was, you know, manufactured, and you don't really know kind of how the sausage was made. But the truth is, a lot of different organizations and people have been a part of this. And I think in the conversations that I get to have with other cities about where we are, there's, and the truth is, like, Chicago is really leading here. And I want you to share a little bit about how that partnership came together and just how important it was, if you can.
Sure, absolutely. So I've worked on a number of programs in my time in government and also previously in helping to work with governmental aid entities. And I have to say that Chicago Connected has really been one of the most incredible partnerships by way of the number of organizations that have been a part of making this happen, but also the thought leadership and collaboration that's gone into making this a truly better program. Phil touched on this, but it's a lot about making sure that we have feedback and are constantly working to improve a program like this because there are so many facets to it. By way of organizations, I know you touched on this very briefly early on. We have somewhere over 11 funders who have helped to make this program happen. The city and CPS put in some funds, including about $5 million of funding from CARES Act money by the city. But the majority of the program is funded through our philanthropic partners. Ken Griffin and Citadel, Crown Family Philanthropies, ITW, Pritzker Traubert Foundation, the Chicago Community Response Fund, the Chicago Community Trust, the JPB Foundation, President Barack Obama and Mrs. Michelle Obama, the MacArthur Foundation, Joyce Foundation, Jones Day. All of these are organizations that came together and realized how important this moment was for us to really make a dent in the digital divide and hopefully catalyze an important investment that'll really change the nature of how students are connecting to the internet in Chicago. And without them, we wouldn't have been where we are today. Phil's talked about the partnership with the ISP providers, Comcast, RCN, and T-Mobile. They've lent not just the program itself, but also marketing efforts. They have their own network of CBOs that they work with. They are working to get the word out through all of the various media channels that they have. They've really, truly been partners with us in helping to make this a better program. And to the point that I made earlier, structuring this program a little bit differently than the way that most services provided in order to meet families where they are. In addition to that, we also have worked with a number of other partners that really represent the glue that helps to keep this program together. United Way and Children's First in particular are helping us to administer the program and serve as fiscal agents. And then, of course, Kids First Chicago, which really catalyzed the discussion around internet connectivity and how urgent it was for us, helping to define the need. And also, importantly, you guys are doing a great job of helping us manage the CBO component, which is really one of the standout characteristics of the program versus some of the other programs nationally. So, you know, aside from really just listing all of those partners, we also have had this really true partnership of how everyone works together to create a program that is really better for families. Darnell mentioned this. We have 35 different CBOs who are working to help to get the word out, but also as we mature the program to help with the digital literacy component. And to me, that's one of the most powerful aspects of free internet. Sometimes it can sound like a flyer in the mail, but in reality, we're talking about one of the greatest equalizers there is for families, not just students, by the way, but also families to be able to, get onto the City College's website and take a course, to learn a new language, to improve their own job skills and do workforce development. Build out that we made in the program around workforce development came out of a specific conversation with one of our funders, as well as some of the work that the mayor's office is doing and marrying that into this program in order to try to connect families. And so, it takes a village for us to get to where we are with this program. And it really, as you can see by just a list of people who have been involved, has taken a number of different partners to really get to where we are and ultimately to help us to get to where we're going.
Thank you, Jenny. So I want to round out with one last question for the broader panel, and I'll start with Darnell, but I would love for the rest of you to speak to it a little bit. You know, it's a question that's come up in a couple places, but, you know, from the community perspective, Darnell, and then more broadly, is this something that we should be thinking about as a permanent solution? What does it look like if it is a long-term solution for the city of Chicago, and who is it for?
Well, yeah, I would say, I mean, currently, you know, our role is to continue to act as a facilitator, you know, for our members and partners to collectively work together, coordinate, be as coordinated as possible around connecting as many households and families as possible. And, you know, to that end, we're working with organizations in the community like Project Exploration and Austin Childcare Providers Network. But when you start to look at, just like how expansive this type of program can get and should get, and what should we be trying to sort of broaden the scope to, you also have to look at, you know, how we can leverage this to identify other issues that households struggle with. Because, you know, as Jenny said, this is sort of a way to level the playing field in terms of helping to create more connectivity for information to flow to individuals and students and households. And so the thing that I think is important for us that we're really focused on the ground as a CBO is really being able to work to enhance the local infrastructure and community so that these households can get the supports they need to address those issues, the many myriad of issues that folks are encountering, whether it be economic, social, medical, and so forth. And so I see this as a great opportunity to be able to build off of a foundation that's been created here of connectivity, and one that is helping folks to really become more informed and capable in their own space.
Thank you, Darnell. Jenny, Phil, one of you guys
sure.
Want
to? Yeah. Yeah, I can add to that. When we rolled out Chicago Connected, it was initially as a response to COVID for CPS students. We very much would like to see what a phase two of this would look like in terms of expanding it to residents more broadly. Having the wired solution was really important in that respect for the phase one so that we could, in fact, reach families while we were in the process of reaching CPS students. But as we think about what this program looks like going forward, I think there's a lot of strategy and planning that we need to do in terms of how we allow for this equalizer to not just apply to students, but to families more broadly who lack internet access. You know, in addition to that, because I'm the CFO of the city, I can't help but also make a plug for the fact that we need more funding for broadband. The city put in $5 million, but the majority of the program is funded through philanthropy. And it's truly a transformational and catalytic investment that they've made in order to get to this groundbreaking program that we have. But, you know, we need more funding to make it even more permanent than the 4 years that we've established at this point. The HEROES Act that had been passed by the House does entail somewhere around $5 billion of funding for broadband nationally. But, you know, importantly, the latest bills, you know, out of the Republican side don't include any funding for broadband. So, you know, we need more funding in order to make what is really truly important utility and tool for families, especially in this modern world where access to information is critical. And create that equalizing effect for Chicagoans.
Thank you. Phil, did you want to expound upon any of that? Or?
Yeah, I'll only add that. I mean, this is a very strong first step. We know it's just the beginning of the journey. You know, Jenny talked about the notion of sustainability and building longer-term infrastructure. Some of the, you know, some of the word that's been bandied about the program is, hey, it's great that you're doing traditional wired access where last mile is not a problem. It's great that you're doing hotspots, but what else are you thinking about? And at this point, you know, I think we're looking at many different options. We're looking at mesh networks. We're looking at what we can do to potentially expand, you know, the CPS network in years down the road to reach local neighborhoods. The bottom line is that this is a start, but there is every intent to continue to march down this path to reach families in need, period. Mayor Lightfoot, Dr. Jackson, this is exactly the type of leadership that that we've needed to kind of get the ball rolling here. And I can tell you that, you know, they challenge us every day to continue to expand our thinking to see how this could, you know, be a much greater play for, you know, to Jenny's point, for families, you know, that might not have a CPS student at home. We started where there was the highest degree of urgency, and I think we're an organization that is positioned to incubate this. But certainly, you know, I think the intent is to keep driving and to expand our reach.
Thank you, Phil. So with that, I'm going to turn now to questions that we've received kind of from the audience in advance, and hopefully we can get to many of these. I make no promises because we have quite a few here and we have, you know, enough time to get through a lot. But I'm going to start with one that came in from Chalk Beach, Chicago. I think the first part of it was definitely answered earlier. But this is probably for you, Phil, but others feel free to chime in. But how exactly are participating internet service providers pitching in to this initiative?
Well, Jenny alluded to it earlier. First and foremost, especially of late, you know, having a mature company to work with really helps, particularly in the area of marketing. These are groups that are, you know, well-established companies. They have a national presence. So they've really helped us sharpen the lens on the nature of the marketing. They've also been incredibly helpful in trying to point out what might be some stumbling blocks before we hit them. You know, unique household situations that we might want to look out for. You know, and also kind of keeping us in tune with a high degree of fidelity and transparency where they might not have the best degree of service.
Looks like we lost Phil there. So I will, we'll have to circle back unless, Jenny, I think you could probably close us out in terms of the conversation.
Sure.
Phil, you're back. All right. We lost Phil on there.
Everybody. I'm not quite sure where I cut off. Hopefully that answer stands.
Yeah. Thank you. Sure. Jenny, anything else you want to add about the partnership with Comcast, RCN and,
yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, Phil talked about the marketing, and I know I mentioned that earlier as well. In addition to that, we structured this program to, you know, really hopefully meet needs of high need families as best we could. So, for example, you don't need a Social Security number in order to sign up. That was a really important part of our discussions to ensure that, you know, families would feel comfortable with the trust factor that Phil talked about earlier. You don't need a background check in order to sign up. There's no upfront installation fee. There are no upfront equipment charges. We spent a lot of time in ensuring that we could build that kind of trust with families that this was truly a program at no cost. and that would meet their needs as it relates to being able to access high-speed internet. And the ISP providers are critical in helping us to craft that type of a program. It's one of the first types of programs like this in the country, and it really was due to a lot of the partnerships that we had with them.
Thank you. A good question that came in from Matt Simpson of the Museum of Science and Industry. The question is, what do you think the biggest challenges facing the proposed solutions or Chicago Connected are today? You know, is it devices? Is it distribution to students? Is it connecting families? Is it the adoption and the use of those students? Like, what are the things that you think are going to be the biggest challenge as we head into the next 3 months to a year?
I could probably start, and I know Phil will have some comments around especially the technology piece. We have done a lot of work over the last couple of months in order to get the word out about Chicago Connected. It started with a targeted marketing campaign because it is an eligibility-based program. Over the course of the next few weeks, as we lead up to back to school, will entail a general marketing campaign, which will include billboards, PSAs, TV ads, radio ads, etc. I think our biggest challenge, which is really a matter of the work that everyone on this phone is doing, but in particular the community-based organizations, is getting the word out and the word of mouth that really starts to build up momentum. We've already seen that momentum start. Like I said, the signups have increased sevenfold over the last couple of weeks. But importantly, that word of mouth is really what allows us to really gain the momentum we need going into the start of the school year. I'm really excited about where we're going in that respect. And, importantly, though, the more we get to our networks and start spreading the word about Chicago Connected so people can get connected to the internet as soon as possible, I think is really important for the program.
I can add a little bit in terms of challenge, Daniel.
Go ahead.
What's really important to us is to ensure that there's a good quality of experience for folks when they call up an ISP or call us up on the phone. So making sure that there is the right mix of outreach and reminder such that it doesn't overwhelm the support apparatus. So it's kind of a balancing act, and we expect that there's going to be a rush of folks, particularly coming up on the start of the school year. So we really need to be sure that we are throttled and staffed appropriately at CPS, at the ISPs, and at the CBOs to make sure that we're positioned for that. And that, when it comes to the actual delivery of the service and closing the deal, that we're giving families a really good experience and that folks aren't waiting for a prolonged period of time. So that is a throttle that is something we discuss every day with our partners to make sure that we're looking at we're looking at the phone lines, we're looking at the questions that are coming in and learning as we go. So I think that would be a primary challenge is throttling the message to make sure that the quality of experience on the back end is really what it should be. We want folks to be able to get through on the first try. We don't want folks on hold for a long period of time. That's one challenge that I would see. And then, of course, I think that, for CPS in broader measure, making sure that for those families that might not be eligible, that we can point them to a viable, low cost alternative is very important for us. We don't want families to have to scrape and search around. We want to tell them that story. We want to do a little bit of that research for them to make it as easy as we possibly can.
And Daniel, I'll just add that, for CBOs and community, I think the thing that the biggest challenge would be, just making sure that within community, the organizations, have the capacity or are able to build the capacity to be able to facilitate the level of direct outreach that needs to go forth in order to connect to the large number, the immense number of homes and households that need to be enrolled in the program, and then ensure that there's coordination between a lot of the different agencies that would be needed to work together to be able to match, what we're all charged with in terms of our community of working in partnership with CPS. I think that's really going to be the focus over the next few months and going on, throughout the year.
Thank you, Darnell. Just to kind of piggyback on the last comment you made, what is just from a realism standpoint or to be reasonable, like what should the expectations for connecting households look like over the next couple months? What are we hoping for? What should people be anticipating? given the amount of work that you're talking about, Darnell, that needs to be put in place to make that happen. But and this is a question for the broader group.
Well, yeah, I think it you know, at this stage, it's such a it's very early for us to even be able to assess that, because you know, when we look at, you know, what the capacity of, say, one organization may be, where they are, you know, existing staff may have been two or three staff members that they could actually get equipped to be able to start facilitating this while trying to go through a process fairly quickly to onboard additional support in terms of temporary labor or additional staff. And so when you just kind of compile all of that together and then span it across maybe several agencies, you know, the likelihood of being able to connect, you know, a few thousand households can become more realistic, but it really dependent upon how fast these CBOs can be able to ramp up and within their internal operations to be able to facilitate this.
Yeah, I would just add to Darnell's comments that we have done a lot of work in trying to reach out to every single one of the points of contact that we have with families. By the end of the program, the 30-point marketing plan that we've put together should, in theory, get at least a dozen points of contact with each and every family, many of those contacts being in person rather than just, for example, text messages or otherwise. But even at that, it's still a sign up that is going to occur each sign up at a time. And so and that's one of the lessons we've learned, is that it's not as easy as send a text message to everybody who, you know, is a part of the program. But it's also making sure that we're effectively communicating what is it that the program's offering. And importantly, that we're also listening to what the community is saying and the families are saying about why this program does or doesn't serve me and how we adjust accordingly. And so that's, you know, been a process. I think to Darnell's point, we have been, you know, really building up a networking of outreach that is going to take some time and has been built up really at breakneck pace. And we'll continue to do that work. But, you know, trying to make sure that we are, you know, applying all the resources necessary to do that will be important for us going forward.
Yeah, thank you. So pivoting back to you, Darnell, question that's really for the broader group, but I alluded to this before, but it keeps coming up as, you know, is there a future state where free public Wi-Fi for all is kind of where we are? And I know we're a long ways away from that. We talked a little about the technology that leads us there, but should this be a function of government to ensure that everyone's connected to the internet? And, you know, where does it sit as a civil rights issue? Is a question that came in from Clayton Harris of the Illinois International Port District.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a number of conversations of this, even at the community level, because I know, you know, our United States Congressman, Danny Davis, he's adopted this and has been taking this on, you know, sort of at, you know, at the federal level around advocating for more subsidy to be able to support his constituents' households in terms of, you know, governmental support around being able to make sure that families have the resources they need, so that while internet and access to internet may not be readily free for them, but they actually have access to subsidy that now allows it to be more affordable. Because even in a situation where you have a family that may qualify for some of the more subsidized programming that internet providers, ISPs put out, you know, paying something as much as $100 a year might still be, you know, for that particular family, you know, unaffordable. And so, you know, that's really sort of the support, or what we've been looking to support in terms of backing, you know, that legislation around that, and seeing, you know, how much further or how, you know, how deeper can we go in terms of being able to ensure that this very essential resource is either affordable or, you know, equitably free for all.
Yeah, I would just add to Darnell's comments that Chicago Connected is a really important first step, but we still have a lot of work to do in terms of figuring out what the permanent solution is going to look like. The technology in this industry is changing so quickly that it's hard to say what is the right solution even. And I think that as we continue to explore how Chicago Connected rolls out, how it is impacting families, we're going to also take a look at what are the best ways for us to be able to do that. The city at this point currently does provide free internet in a number of different places. CPS has internet for CPS students. The Chicago Public Libraries provides free internet. But we know that, kind of broader access to internet is still really important and is still lacking. And that's why Chicago Connected was an important first step for us, even before COVID, had been talked about as a part of the mayor's STEP agenda to end poverty in a generation, and is a really important equity issue. So to the point about the question about a civil rights issue, it is one of the most important equalizers that we can provide to not just students, but Chicagoans more broadly. And so there's a lot of work to do there. I don't know that anybody really has the right answer at this point. And, more importantly, though, we are going to start taking a look at that and seeing ways that we can try to move the needle on this.
And I would only add, Daniel, that one of the ways we move that needle is to work with other cities that are asking us for advice and structure. Right. That's a very important piece. If we can be multipliers here and make sure that this type of a model is adopted in other cities, and that kind of raises the collective voice that this is an issue that really needs to be looked at a national level. So that's why we take that part of this very seriously. When another city reaches out to ask us, how did we do this? How were you successful here? Or what are you learning as you go along? Again, that's a very important component. If in fact, and I believe we all are very passionate about this issue and really raising it to a national level.
Thank you, Phil. And I'm very aware of the time, the ticker counting down. So I apologize to everyone whose questions I will not be able to hit. There was a quick question just to get the definition of broadband, which I think is important for people to hear here. And if you want to do a quick hit on what the definition of broadband is, Phil, that'd be great.
Now we're just looking at 25 and 3 speeds, and this is kind of what the standard is, and what we seek to provide our students through the program. So our ISP providers have committed to that, and we feel that that's going to be suitable for remote learning.
Awesome. And then there was two questions that I'm just going to combine into one, which are really around, what is the ask here? Where are the resources that you can point people to that want to spread the word? And what would you ask people who are listening in and watching right now to do in support of Chicago Connected?
Sure. So we have a Chicago Connected website, Phil, I know you have the address memorized, but importantly on the website, there is an eligibility tool which allows for families to be able to check whether or not they're eligible. I would say more importantly than that, the ask is for people to reach out to their networks and basically spread the word. It's really a transformational program. 100,000 students is out of 300,000 plus students in the district is enormous. And so it's going to take all of us putting the word out to really be able to get the signups, to the target that we're looking for.
And if I am another city and I'm thinking about doing this, or if I'm Collar County, Cook County, what are the steps that I should be thinking about taking if I wanted to make something similar happen in my backyard? So, Phil, I'll point to you first for that one.
Sure. Well, I think, in light of where we're at with COVID, starting at a school district level would be my first recommendation. There's usually a pretty rich data set around families and addresses. And, that's a data set that is the bedrock of everything else that happens after it. I would also say that it's key to establish a formal framework between the organizations. One of the things that I've been really happy about thus far is that most every organization that's participating, egos are checked at the door because we're all driving to a vision here. And making sure that there are clean swim lanes up front and that everybody knows what their respective roles are was the key to us being able to mobilize and get this out the door, relatively quickly. I know some would say not quickly enough. But again, I'm trying to channel my inner John Wooden, be quick, but don't hurry. There's a level of thoughtfulness that is required in this work. And, I would say that, have a formal framework. School is a bedrock is very important. And, be willing to have very detailed conversations with your partners. I think that there was a lot of nuance, and we took the time to do it right. We took the time to really cover, you know, even the minutia in, you know, what would be a normal coverage deal for a family, to make sure that, you know, we were really setting a new standard. So I would start there.
Awesome. Thank you. So as we close out, I would love for each of you to take, you know, 30 to 60 seconds and just share kind of some final words on the program, your aspirations, kind of what you hope will come out of it in the next few months and even longer with the group here. I'll start with Jenny. If you could go first, that'd be great.
Sure. I think what I would say in terms of final remarks is I'd leave you with one number, which is 100 hours. And what that is the number of hours that my family has spent on the internet or screen time over the last week. Whether it's, you know, my kids on TV, they've been doing a lot of YouTubing of Venus flytraps, which is their summer project. My husband teleworks. They're, you know, reaching out to their grandparents in Taiwan and Cleveland and Chicago. You know, whatever it is, we spend a ton of time on the internet, and you don't even think about it because we have access to it and high speed access to it. It's a luxury. And this program has become a reminder for me of that and how really important it is, you know, for all of us to stay connected with others and be a voice in this community, especially post COVID. And so, you know, that's really what gets me going in terms of the program that we've created here and how transformational it is. And I would hope that others would take that and spread that excitement and word to others as well.
Thank you, Jenny. Phil, you want to take the next step?
For me, I think there's no greater call to arms for public service. I think that this has been perhaps the most rewarding initiative that I've been involved in my career. And, you know, I would encourage others to really believe that, you know, government can do good things. I just want to also mention that, you know, it's just the beginning. We're 100,000 students, 60,000 families. This is not an end line, right? This is a goal that will be replaced by another goal and another goal after that. We got to keep pushing. And, you know, to the extent that, you know, we want to be multipliers, everyone within the sound of my voice, to kind of echo Jenny's sentiments, this program's real. And get the word out. We want to service as many families as we can.
Thank you. Darnell?
Yeah, I'll just hold up the importance and highlight the importance of the internet, accessing the internet in this program. I mean, we're living in the digital and information age, and to not be able to access the internet is the equivalent of being disconnected from any other lifeline. You're cut off from all that is available to you for the most part, which is a matter of equity. At this point. And, you know, currently digital access is essential for families to continue their education, but even more imperative to connect to the multitude of resources and relief that can support and assist families in the midst of COVID-19's impact and beyond. And so, you know, in Austin, you know, and across the city, we're going to continue to be an advocate for this type of programming, this type of collaboration, this type of partnership to be supported. And to the end where it yields to families to be able to actually have this be affordable or even free for that matter.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to all three of you for the time. We are at time, so I'm going to say really quickly, thank you to the City Club and to Stiefel, and specifically City Club board member Omar Dagestani, along with everyone else who tuned in today to watch this. This has been a lot of work. There's a lot of work ahead, and the team of folks that you saw, I think, are exceptional examples of real leadership in the city, and we hope to connect as many families as possible, so help us get the word out and do that. Thank you again.
Wow, what a great conversation. Daniel, Jenny, Darnell, and Philip, on behalf of the City Club of Chicago, I'd like to present you with a complimentary one-year membership and the famed City Club mug. Thank you again for participating today. It was really a great conversation. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and continuing to support the City Club of Chicago. Following the program, viewers will receive a brief email survey. Fill it out. We want to hear from you. And if you do, you'll be entered into a raffle to win a Let Us Entertain You gift card. Thank you again to our panelists, and have a great day.